And welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show this beautiful Wednesday morning. Here is Teresa Casolino and me, Kimberly Rogers. We are your Hebrew Nation Morning Show co-hosts today. How are you doing, Teresa?
Doing good. How are you doing?
What are you laughing at?
Did you almost call me Carissa?
I did.
That's why I'm laughing. That's why.
Well, because I got the C on your last name mixed up with the T on your first name.
I almost heard a little bit of Korea going on there.
Did that happen?
Is that what you were doing?
Actually,
I caught you.
You know, Korea is, it's a pretty name, isn't it?
It is.
I like that name, Korea.
Oh, no.
I think it would make a pretty woman's
name.
Oh,
no. You're not going to call me Korea, are you?
No.
Carissa.
Carissa. Yeah. I mean, some women are named Corey, right? Korea. That's kind of pretty.
Yeah.
All right. You no more comments out of you, I guess.
Just everything slowed down right quick.
All righty. Well, we have a very special guest coming on in the second hour of this show. And that guest is coming on related to what we're going to do in this hour of the show. And in this hour of the show, we are going to play two interviews that I made when I was in Jordan, in Aqaba. Okay. Go ahead.
No, oh, okay. I'm saying, okay.
Okay. And so this first one has to do with my interview with some members of the community, the Hebrew Roots or Ephraimite community there in Jordan. And I'll tell you what, if the Lord would let me, I would just move to Jordan. I really would. In fact, I came home and I told my son, I want to move to Jordan. and he went,
wow.
Cool. Yeah, that was his response. Yeah.
Oh, well, really? He said cool?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm surprised.
Yeah. Why?
Cause wouldn't they miss you?
Well, of course they would. My daughter-in-law said, you're not going anywhere. But,
okay.
But see, my daughter-in-law, she is like Ruth. You know, she would just, you know, not like to have me not be around. I mean, she likes to have me around, which is wonderful. I love my daughter-in-law. But anyway, so, in this first hour, that's what we're going to do. We're going to play this interview with some members of the Hebrew Roots or Ephraimite community there in Aqaba. And then in the second hour, we're going to have one of the members of that community come on, and we'll be interviewing him and talking about these interviews. Are you ready?
I am.
We're here with
Gary from the great state of Texas.
How did you get to Aqaba, Jordan?
That was a drug habit. My wife drugged me here. No.
Okay.
I went to Sukkot in 2009 and pretty much had my eyes open. Sent my wife over here. She came as an exploratory visit in February of 2010. Liked it. Put a lease on a place and went back home. We packed everything up and moved here.
So do you like it here?
Love it here.
And what is it that you like about here?
Because we step back in time to about the 50s. It's kind of a laid back atmosphere. There's no hustle bustle. It's a challenge to get things done here. We don't have a Walmart. We don't have a Home Depot. And it brought me to the land. This is where we need to be.
Right. One of the things that people need to understand is that the political state of Israel's
nice. I mean, everybody wants to go to Israel, but Israel's got their political deal, what makes it kind of difficult. And this is just as good as being across the border right now.
Well, I appreciate you answering these few questions, and we're going to move on to another person here. I'm thinking about talking with Bob, and he's eating, but he's next on the list.
Well, hello.
Now, that food is from your wife's kitchen, and we've had, this is like, what, the third time we've been over here, and she is such a cook. And you would not be able to believe, people, the food that can be made here. I mean, if you don't think about camels and sparse cooking, no, there's real good food here in Jordan. And I think Valerie probably makes the best. How long have you been here?
We're going on 10 years now. Going on 10 years since we've been here.
Wow. Now, what was your occupation in the States?
In the States, I worked for the largest trucking company in the world, Yellow Roadway Corporation.
What made you come here?
Well, we had been studying in Hebraic roots and had always wanted to come to the Holy Land and had looked for different ways to come. We came thinking we might be part of an agricultural project, and the woman leading that ended up going back to the States with heart problems or physical problems, and so that didn't develop, but we still wanted to stay.
So what do you like about being here in Jordan?
Several things, actually. We were able to find other employment, like we teach English, and which was not my profession. We got good jobs. It was not high pay, but it was all we needed. Everything we needed, he provided. But in a teaching capacity, one thing that's, to me, is really neat is the parents, the students, the community around you, they just give you a lot of respect because you were their teacher.
Yeah.
And the people here are very respectful and very courteous, and I think any country could learn from their hospitality here. They have awesome hospitality.
Thank you, Bob,
You're welcome.
Letting me interrupt your good dinner there.
<All right.
laughs> Now, this is Pam. And Pam has been here for how long?
About 10 years.
Okay, so some of you came together.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, we did.
A lot
of us did.
Okay, so about how many people do you think are here in the Ephraimite community?
I think Joni, one of our people, counted 70.
Okay, so 70 people.
Uh-huh.
How many people were here before you came?
There were about 5 or 6 here when we came.
So you were pioneers, but not the first wave of pioneers.
Right.
Right. Okay, I understand now. You have told me a lot about this culture and some of the things you appreciate about it. Would you be willing to share some of those sentiments with our audience?
They are wonderful people. They immediately say, "Are you American?" And you say, "Yes." They say, "Welcome, welcome. How may we help you?" Their whole demeanor, their whole way of life is to serve. "How may we serve you" is what you get sometimes. And it's "as you wish." It's like they truly have the hospitality of Abraham. I mean, they will, you can't just go into a small store and buy something. They want a relationship with you. They want to sit and talk with you and get to know you. And most of the time, when you get to know them, after a while, you become part of their family as far as they're concerned.
Yeah.
Wonderful people.
Wow. Well, that's great. I know when we went to Petra, we stopped at a souvenir shop, and they gave us tea, and they talked with us, and the lady there tried to dress me, you know, to conform a little bit better to their cultural standard, but they're very friendly people here.
They're very friendly, but you don't have to wear their burkas or their hijabs or anything like that to live here. You have to be conservative, and you're not going to wear low-cut blouses, and, you know, you need to have respect for their culture.
Right.
Which is, you know, women should be modestly dressed, but you don't have to wear all their stuff that they wear.
I don't think I've asked you this before, but do you think there is a difference between Jordanian culture and, say, you know, the Muslims who live in Iraq or Syria or Morocco? Do you think that Jordanians are special in some way?
Yes, I do. I think they are. I think that the ability to inculcate or to include you into their society is they approve, accept you a whole lot more, I think, than other societies. I was supposed to go to Saudi Arabia to test some people for their English language to see what level they were on. I had to wear a burqa to go. I mean, I could not go into Saudi to Riyadh, whatever it is, unless I wore the burqa. And you don't have to do that here. I mean, that's not necessary at all.
So you didn't go?
So I didn't go, right. I didn't end up going because I did not feel comfortable with doing that.
Well, Valerie, I want to talk with you next because this home here seems to be a hub where people come because you are such a great hostess.
And cook.
And cook. And I mean, you know, the food here has just been awesome. Tell me a little bit about what you do here in Jordan. Are you teaching English as well?
Yes.
Besides teaching English and living here, what would you like for Ephraimites in the United States to know about Jordan?
Well, like you mentioned earlier, Jordan is part of what we consider to be the Greater Promised Land. And for most of us, unless, you know, our mothers were practicing Jews, living in Israel proper right now is not a possibility. So Jordan is a possibility. We personally prayed for, you know, Yah to send us a way to come to the land because we felt the call to come home. I think that Ephraim needs to be looking at the fact that their call is to come home. And if you start praying for a way to do that, he's going to give you one. And he gave us one. And this was the only thing he gave us. But I can see in Scripture that the people who will inherit this very place where we're sitting are the people whose ancestors lived in Jerusalem, or the descendants of Judah who went to Sepharad, which, you know, you can say that that's Assyria or Spain or, you know, the Sephardic Jews, as you like. But the deal is that he told us to come home. You can come home here, and the people here accept you. Somebody asked us last week if there were rockets, you know, flying over, and it's like, you know, no, there's no rockets flying over. The people here actually have a more laid-back attitude than they do even in Jerusalem. You can feel a difference, like when we go up for the feasts. The atmosphere from the Muslim community there is much different than it is here. It's much more relaxed, even though the majority of the population here is Palestinian. So the interesting thing for us, I'm going into some other territories here, but the interesting thing for us when we came was our first jobs teaching English were to school children, you know, in one of the schools here, and the children don't have their heads covered, and you can see the color of their hair and how, you know, curly it is. And you can see their noses in their eyes, and you realize that you're not really looking at your typical Arab, you're really looking at what you would see as Hebrew children. You know, their families were, you know, forced converted, or they were going to be kicked out of the land. And so many of these children, some of the families know who they are. Some of them don't know who they are, just like Americans who have no clue that they're part of Israel. So for us, when we look at the people who are living around us, we're looking at which one's really Israel. So it's been good for us, and the water is fine. I would say come on in.
So now, do you think that someone could move to, let's say, Amman or one of the other smaller communities and do as well there? Or do you think they need to be in Aqaba?
It depends on if they were just looking for employment, the chances of getting employment in a bigger city would probably be better. However, to just reside in Jordan outside of Aqaba, your visa requirements are different. Like to reside in Aqaba because it's a special economic zone, you can live here with, you know, about $14,000 in a bank account. You can get a year visa. If you want to live in Amman, from what I understand, if you really want to start your process in Amman, it's $50,000 you have to have. So you can't just live anywhere unless you want to keep an apartment here. If that was your desire, you'd want to check it out. However, if you're working, you don't have to have any special amount of income or anything. The problem here is there, you know, a mass array of jobs? No. you know, we've been blessed and obedient, and he's made a way for us to stay here. But most of the people that are here now are retired.
Well, thank you. You know, that brings us to a new question about families with children. Why don't you, will you tell us your name and how you got here and what you do with your family for education?
My name is Tracy. We have a 5-year-old boy named Asher, or in Arabic, Ashur. They love his name, even though it's one of the 12 tribes. They don't seem to care or know. I homeschool him. because that was my choice. There are schools he could go to here. There's an international school that he could go to and speak English, but I don't want to send him there. Plus, it's expensive, and we're not rich people. Again, we're below the retirement age, so we work. I teach English, too, sometimes, and I also cut hair and do reflexology for women. Our little boy, he's got some friends. There's some other American children he gets to play with sometimes through his age. So that's fun, someone he can speak English with. He's picking up Arabic, although slowly. You don't have to know Arabic to get along here. I've gotten in taxis before, and the driver, I asked if he spoke English. He says, yes, how are you? Hello. But that was the extent of what he knew. So he got somebody on the phone who could understand English and take me where I wanted to go. Their hospitality is incredible. Our little boy was not quite two when we came, and I'm telling you, I cannot walk down the street with him without somebody. Even still, if I go into a nut shop to buy coffee, they have candy. They give him some. Always. It's just they love children, and they're very friendly. Even when I don't want him to have candy, you know, there's always somebody with a bag of chips. One time we were really hungry, and we were going to a restaurant, and someone just passed by on the street and very quickly stuck a bag of chips in his hand. He had just come out of a convenience store with three bags of chips. He didn't buy them for us. He just, it's on their hearts. That's how God has put them here, and he's programmed them with this hospitality to be kind to us. And we just moved, in fact, and we were concerned about how much it would cost to move. People volunteered, Muslims volunteered to help us, and they helped us all through the way, just to bless us. We didn't ask. They just wanted to help us. And this is the kind of place that you're in. These are not terrorists. I haven't met any terrorists yet. They've all been very, very kind.
One of the stereotypes that Americans have about any country in the Middle East is that there's going to be rockets flying and terrorist activities and bombs going off everywhere. And, you know, people walk down the street here at night. You know, you can't really do, and there's no crime. I haven't, you know, you don't have a sense of crime. It's very low crime rate here. And so there's no reason to feel unsafe here. This is Norm. How are you doing, Norm?
Fine. How are you?
Good.
Good, good.
Tell us about your experience coming to Jordan. You're the father to the little
Asher.
Boy Asher and Tracy's husband.
Yes. My journey started a long time ago, back in the late 90s. And I just woke up one morning and I felt that the Father had shown me to find the place of safety. And I think this is an issue that a lot of people don't address to, but I was on a journey at that. Even before I met Tracy, I had told her when we were dating that I'm looking for the place of safety. I feel God has instructed me to do this. Over time, one thing led to another, and I, like my friend Gary, in Sukkot, where we met back in 2009, found out about Jordan. And I discussed what I was looking for, and then I went on a trip with my friend Gilbert to Israel, involved in the dig of the Ark of the Covenant, which I did not pursue. But as when we came over here to Israel, he decided to come to Aqaba, Jordan, and he brought me down here. After about a week, two or three, 4 days of visiting and going to Petra and looking things over and experiencing the people here, I fell in love with the place. And so I went back to the States and I told Tracy, I says, we're packing up and going to move to Jordan. And I said, I think I found a place of safety too, because this is where the two great wings are. Mm-hmm. Mentioned of in Scripture in the Old Testament as well as Book of Revelation. Jordan is, I believe, is the place where the Father is going to bring his people to and bring them out of Babylon for the last days and the tribulations. And he's promised to make that place of safety where we'll be covered under his wings. And those wings are here in Jordan. And when I came here, I was more than impressed with the people and the land. Sure, it gets hot here, any desert land, and there's a lot you need to learn. But we've enjoyed living here and enjoyed the people as well as the many Americans that have moved here. And I would recommend coming here if you want to leave America. Yeah, it's a very accommodating country, very lovely people. And the culture is not exactly all you would think the way they dress. It's strictly Muslim dress, but it's not. We know Christians here, they're Arabs, and they dress the exact same way. They dress with the men wear the dish dashes. They use the word for God as Allah, and these are Christian men. Because you have to also, you will learn by living here to understand and learn more about the Arabic language and to understand that, but the word Allah just means God. You're learning their culture, what they're about, who they really are. And they want peace. They don't want war. They're not terrorists. And as living here in Aqaba, I would say in the last 14 years that I know about, there's only been two people murdered, and it was a family feud. And there hasn't been any other murders going on here. How can you say that about any American city in the United States? You know, it's, you know, there's murders every day there. But here, we can go to bed at night with our doors unlocked, still to this day.
Wow.
Yeah. And we have many times, we forget to lock our doors, you know, with the windows open, you know.
Now, I want to talk with Kay. You're kind of a newcomer to Aqaba, is that correct?
Well, if you call 7 years a newcomer.
Oh, sorry.
But I'm not here all the time.
Oh, okay. Well, that's maybe where I got that impression.
But I have maintained a residence here for 7 years.
Okay. So what is it that you want the Ephraimite community to know? You have expressed to me that you feel like a bridge between the United States and the Middle East somewhat.
Something like that, although I've been out of the U.S. Pretty consistently since 1999, so I haven't actually had a residence there since I left there in 99, and then lived in Israel until 2008, on and off, as a tourist, coming and going, but maintaining a residence there also, then moved to Aqaba. So I have a bit of Israel in this mix of being in Aqaba. And I see Aqaba as a place where people from the United States who are interested in Israel, in Hebraic roots, in this region of the world, a place that is presently open for them to come and transition into whatever is next in this unfolding scenario of the ingathering and the kingdom. Aqaba fits an awful lot of criteria for people who have started to be drawn to this place, this region of the world, Israel in particular, greater Israel. So that's kind of what my interest is in helping facilitate some ways for people to come here, either to visit, to start volunteering short-term, long-term, to set up residences, to begin to come, to start crossing that bridge, coming and going at first perhaps, and eventually being able somehow, some way to remain.
And now we have John and Betty, who have been here for quite some time in Aqaba. Is that right? Is it right, John? How long have you been here?
16 years.
Yes. Do you like it here?
I love it.
You have a lovely home here. One of the things that I've noticed about being here is how beautiful the homes are. You're not living in tents and chasing little desert animals to get food here. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes, we love it here.
And you have a nice big community here. For instance, right now we're here at a prayer meeting and I'm interviewing you afterwards. Tell us a little bit about your community here, Betty.
Well, actually, when we first came, it was with Kay and Mac and Joni and Dolly. There's no other place. This is home. When we came, of course, at first, we thought we'd like to be in Israel, but we learned that this is greater Israel, so we are in Israel. This is interesting. When we were here for Feast of Tabernacles in 98, and he spoke to me and said, "This is where I want you to live." And I said, "Oh, I'm not telling John about this. You're going to have to speak to him." So 3 months later, he came out one morning from prayer, and he said, "I think we better reconsider going to Jordan." And I said, "Reconsider? We've never considered going." And he said, "Then we better consider going, because the Lord spoke to me this morning." And that was in the first part of 99. And by July of 99, we were here. The hottest time of the year, we came to Jordan, and we haven't regretted one moment. It's been wonderful.
Wow. That is an amazing...
03-316-1220. Shalom.
KPJC Salem.
Welcome back to the second half hour of the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. This is Kimberly Rogers and Teresa Casolino co-hosting this morning on this beautiful Wednesday morning, and I really do mean that. It's nice and sunny out here, and I've had my cup of coffee, and I'm sure you have too, Teresa.
No, I'm not actually having anything today, so that's funny.
Oh, no. Okay.
Yep.
Well, anyways. In the last half hour, we listened to an interview from the Ephraimite community that's in Jordan. One of the interesting things about that Ephraimite community is that at this point, we're going to talk about this in the next hour with our special guest, but at this point, there are 70 people that they counted in that Ephraimite community, and they've been there for just about 20 years, you know, starting about 20 years ago. They started moving there, and now they're up to 70 in number. Now, 70 is the number of nations, and as we're going to talk in the next hour, we're going to find out that they now believe it is time to let people, especially people in the United States, know about them. But when I was there, I got to meet a Bedouin man who I just love. I love this man. And he is a Muslim. And what you're going to hear is him saying...
Rewind.
Yes, I'm going to play an interview with a Muslim Bedouin. Okay?
All right.
I'm not, you know, saying everybody go out and, you know, learn all about Islam. I just want you to hear this man's heart. As a matter of fact, what this man says this morning in this interview, the King of Jordan has said, and that is that he agrees with Obama, that these men that are doing this ISIL and ISIS thing, you know, this Islamic State thing, that they are not really Muslims. But just listen to the interview, and then I'm going to share with you my perspective of this later on, okay? And just so keep your heart and mind open.
Okay.
Yep, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, what is your name?
My name is Harb Zawaide from Jordan, Wadi Rum.
Okay, so we're here at the Bedouin camp in Wadi Rum, and I have to tell you, this is a beautiful place. I love it here. I love your decorations, and I was telling my friends here that this reminds me of American Desert Southwest, you know, where I used to live there, you know, it looks familiar to me. Now, let me tell you who I'm here with. This is Dave and Faye. Say your names.
David.
Faye.
Pam.
Larry.
Okay. So we came out to visit here, and one of the things that we started talking about was the war with ISIS in Iraq and Syria. Give us your perspective on that. Tell us again what you said.
You know what I see, what I hear here in the region, let me say, shame. It is shame. Because what the people doing in Syria or Daesh in Arabic word, it is nothing about Islam. They are do something different than Islam. Islam is never ever kill somebody. What they do, what I see, it is shame. Because what we have in our religion, you can go and read the Quran and Sunnah. Never ever Quran and Sunnah says kill somebody or fight somebody. Our religion is a peace. But those people, I don't know from where bring this believer. So what they do, all the Muslims here, it is against what they do. Because we don't want to kill each other or kill somebody. It is not Muslim or Muslim or never. The blood, it is forbidden for us. So what we feel here, feel shame from what they do. We are against them. So,
well, Americans hear a lot about jihad in the Quran. What is jihad?
You know, jihad, it is sometimes when you explain this word, you explain it different. Jihad, it is when the people coming to fight you, you should to defense in yourself. So it is not good to jihad to force the people to bring them and become Muslim. For example, if the people come to take your land, for example, you have to fight in your land. If somebody come to take your family or thing, you want to fight against them. This is jihad. Not go to other people and save people and kill them and say this is jihad. Sometimes we need to explain the words and to let the people out of Islam to understand Islam. Please not judge for those people. They are use the Islam like the blanket. So they want to divide between Muslims and other our friends in other. We respect. I am not be Muslim if I am not believe in Christianity. I am not be Muslim if I am not believe in the Jewish. This is our religion. I never be Muslim if I'm not believe in Jesus. Never ever. This is text in Quran. If I'm not believe in Jesus or in Moses, then I'm not Muslim. My Muslim is bad here. Not be Muslim. So we are love each other. We love Christianity. We love the Jewish. Never ever. And in our religion, it's allowed for us to marry from the Christian lady or Jewish lady. This is, I don't know from where bring those strange things that what I hear in media or any, sometimes the people out of Islam, they misunderstand the fact here. If they want, come to visit us in Jordan and we can explain you. Don't just hear the medias. The bad news now, it is the news that you can sell. But, sometimes we have we feel shame. Some people, they are looking for us as a terror people. We are not.
So when we hear some Muslims say in their recordings, like those men from ISIS who are committing those beheadings, and they say, we are Islam, in your view, they really are not representing Islam very well.
They said Islam. Everybody can says I am Muslim and I am. But who make him leader for the billions of Muslims? Mm-hmm. Who ask him to be the leader for that? Who? He's put himself. It cannot anybody said I'm a Christian and I do like this. But who make him is a leader of that? He make himself as a leader. We not believe in him. So those people, they are destroy the Islam. They mean that to destroy the Islam. It's not help the Islam because the Islam is not like this. Never, ever. If you don't believe me, come back and read the book, our book, and the Sunnah. If you see very, very big difference between those people. Never have a knife and kill somebody with the knife. For what? For what? It is...
Are you a member of a particular sect of Islam? Like there are Shiites and Sunnis and Wahhabis and Alawites. Are you a member of... what
yes,
sect?
Yes, I am a Sunnah.
Okay.
I am Sunnah. And this is not that different. The problem for the people themselves. But even Shiite, even Sunnah, they're not allowed for anybody. We have one book. But the people they are use or believe in things in their mind. They bring and they presentative that I am the leader of Islam. But who ask you to do that?
Right.
Nobody. From himself.
Why is it they say they're Islam, yeah, but yet they're blowing up mosques? They're blowing up mosques in Saudi. They're blowing up, I'm not in Saudi, but in Syria, they're blowing up mosques. Iraq, they blow up mosques. How can they be Islam and they're blowing up mosques?
Or killing other Muslims?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. This is the answer. This is the good answer for those people. They are bad people. Mm-hmm. If he's really as very good question. If he destroy the mosque or destroy the church, or now they are destroy the mosques, yeah, and the churches and kill the Muslims and kill the Christian people and kill anybody in the earth with those people. My one question that please don't use the Islam cover to make the Muslims is terror. What we see in, for example, in France, in the newspaper there, one of the people killed from the army, he's a Muslim. In the military of France, he's a Muslim. And the killer is, now show me where's the terror for that. Those people themselves, they are bad people. Not, we're talking about personality, not about the Islam itself. The Islam is out of those people. We want to talk about the persons, the people themselves, not about Islam. If someone do something wrong and he's a Christian, I cannot say the Christianity is bad. I see this person is bad. So the religion is from God. All the religions from God. It is nobody touch but the people use that for themselves.
Now we have in the world a very broad brush, and we paint all Muslims with the same brush.
Yeah.
You know, we put all Muslims under the same blanket rather than understanding that they're not all like that. They are not all in agreement with what is going on. That's what you're trying to say.
Yes. And this is why you are here and talking with me.
Right.
Do you see I'm killing you now? So it is, you know, this is, we, as you said, please, I'm talking, if my friends everywhere hearing me, we are a people in Islam. We love all the people in the earth, and you are free to choose your religion. You have to respect me. I respect you. Do what you want to do. This is the religion is from God, and we have one God. So.
You welcome many Christian tours that bring Christians to this camp yearly, many times.
You know. Last night I have 27, and religious people, they are praying here. And every day I have a lot of people from all of the country. When we are talking like this with the warm talking, we are laughing for what happened in the earth. So when the people coming here and we are talking or discussing, or the people feel happy and feel shame for what happened in the earth. Why? Just we hear in the news, but when we meet the people, really very nice people. And you are, as a pair and a people American here, you are living in Jordan, yes, in Aqaba.
Right.
Do you see something bad here?
No.
So,
no.
just want to give a message for the people there. Not only just see the media. Sometimes the media, it is misleading you to what they want to sell.
Right.
This is, they need the money, and the word now is follow the money, and now we're talking about the values. Please come to see the values, the hospitality here. We are not killer, please.
Right. Yes, the interests of big corporations and governments is not the same interests as people. Our governments and our corporations are leading the world into this split between those who want to fight and those who do not want to fight.
Yeah, you know, if I don't like to talk about the government, about the politics thing. The politics is still politics. It's not real because this is politics. But I'm talking as a people. And I have a lot of friends everywhere. Every day we email each other. We meet them in the Facebook. We meet them in the emails. We talk with each other as friends. We are happy for that. We don't want those people come to destroy our relationship. We want to kick them out.
Right. But nonetheless, there are those Muslims who want to convert Christians, and that has been going on for 1400 years. And there have been wars. So how do you get that worked out in your mind and in your heart, Harb?
Yes, if always want to think about the war and you killing me and killing you, then we still, all of our life, we're killing each other. So the past, we leave it in the past. A lot of war happened between the countries. In the Europe, a lot of war happened between, for example, Germany and Netherlands and a lot. Now they are all of them in one union, in one. So if you want to think about the killing, then we'll be stupid people and we come go to the back. Now everything want to leave it behind us and looking in the future, our children, our life, want to keep, protect our planet. If I'm Muslim, I can pray, I can do my things, and I don't want, it's not allowed for to hurt you or to force you to come to me or killing you or killing me. Respect each other, love each other, living with each other. We need in this planet more than before to cooperate with each other more than before. So we want to put the behind and not thinking, oh, you killed me before and I kill you before, like the children. Now we are in the century 21st. Now our brain more than before. Now technology everywhere. You can read everything, anything you want to, any knowledge, you can reach it and read it. So we don't want to think about the war before, because some people, they are use those things because he need to reach some goal, and he doesn't mind if the people kill each other and make a touch between the Christianity and Muslims.
So you think that ISIS is inflaming the hatred between people, not only between Muslims and Christians, but some Sunnis, Shiites, they're killing those people too. They're killing everyone who does not agree with them.
You know, ISIS, they are sometimes maybe kill each other.
Yes.
So don't think they have a goal and they said, I want to kill. I don't know right now, and I'm living close of them. I don't know they are killing who. They're killing Muslims, they're killing Christians, they're killing each other, they're killing animals. So those people, it's crazy, dirty people. This is what I want to say, dirty people. And as you know, sometimes they are get, for example, a person and kill him because they want to make unstable in the country. For example, what they took the pilot, for example, they want to make, because we are here is tribes. They want to make unstable with the tribes. They want to make also Jordan, for example, or in Japan, or against the government, they make troubles between the countries themselves. So those people, they are dirty people. They are not belong to Islam. Islam is not like that.
Okay.
But they cover the Islam, and this is our destiny. And
I'd like to say something about Harb. Yeah. I have known Harb. I'm Christian. Harb is Muslim. But he has been like a brother to me since I've been in the land of Jordan, in Aqaba. And also, the Harb has workers that work his camps. And he not only hires Muslim, but over half of his people that work for him are Christian. His people are Coptic Christians from Egypt. And he's been wonderful to them. They wouldn't work anywhere else. They would work for Harb only.
Right. Well, the other night at dinner, you made a famous statement. Would you say that again, just what you said about suffering? You go,
suffering. Well, if my Christian neighbors treated me as well, I mean, if my Christian brethren would treat me as well as my Muslim friends, then I would think the kingdom had come.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. 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 He was like, ooh, we suffering.
Yeah, we're suffering down here in Jordan. It's awfully difficult. We suffering here.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I was looking at that.
Welcome, we're as welcome in Harb's home as anywhere. And he's had us to his home, and he is a friend, and he's a kind and generous man, and really has, you know,
the hospitality of Abraham,
yes. You know, yes. Flows in his life, and not just his, but the extended community in all of this part of Jordan. I mean, it is only can be lived. You can hardly express it. You can only come here and see it.
I need to experience it.
Thank you for letting me interview you, Harb, because I think we need to get a different perspective in the United States. A lot of this news, as you said, comes from the big corporations, their need to exaggerate it and
manipulate it, and you make it seem like it's much worse than it is, you know. And I think we just need to understand that there are brethren among us, whether they're Christians or Muslims.
Thank you so much for you and for my friends here. Thank you so much to give me the opportunity to explain what's the real or what's the fact here in Muslims. And all my greetings to my friends everywhere in the earth.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. You know, I love Harb and his family, and you know, we're going to talk about this with our special guest in the next hour some more, because there is more to this Muslim thing than what I have taught. You know, I mean, we tend to paint all Muslims with the same brush stroke, you know, without realizing that there are Jacobites among the Muslims. And I say that because there have been hundreds of millions of Christians and Jews forcibly converted to Islam. There have been 270 million Jews that were killed because they would not convert to Islam in the last 1400 years.
Right.
But probably as many or more forcibly converted to Islam. And you know what, Teresa? We're having an awakening in the, in the church, right?
Yeah.
Among the Catholics and the Protestants, they're waking up. And you know what I think? I think that's happening in Islam as well. They're waking up. They're figuring out who they are. This is why there are so many Muslims that are converting to Christianity. But you know, Harb is just a beautiful person. And he said, you know, finally he says, you know, we're not going to solve this thing. Let's go see some rocks. And so he took us out in the Midian Mountains he gave us a free tour. And he took us in the Midian Mountains where Moses was. I got to go see where Moses was.
Oh, and I got chills.
I know. And so he's driving us on in his truck through these like mountain passes, you know, and then we came to this one spot where it opened up. And I am telling you, I could see the tents of Jacob. I could just see the tents of Jacob there. Now, I don't know for sure that the children of Israel set up camp there, but this is the area where Moses was. Aqaba is ancient Etam. Etam was the second place where the children of Israel set up camp. You know, modern Aqaba is ancient Etam. And where Harb was, that's just a few miles outside of Aqaba. So it is entirely possible that we had the children of Israel setting up camp there. And I could just see the tents. It is so beautiful. And those mountains are stunning.
And when you're saying you could see the tents, like you could imagine what it would look like with the tents being set up, but like you actually saw tents.
Well, you know, I didn't.
Maybe you did.
I didn't physically see the tents, but there was a vision, a very clear vision of it. And I was just stunned. I mean, so.
That's
what
cool.
I say? We'll be back on the other side. Stay tuned. You're going to want to hear this about Aqaba, Jordan, and the safe places.
Gold at any price is beyond what most of us can afford, but we need to plan for our future in small steps. Accurate Precious Metals Refineries in Salem is doing something to help us, something I've never seen before. Half gram, 1 gram, and 2.5 gram mini bars are available now. Accurate Precious Metals Refineries is making it easier for all of us to own a little more security and become a little less dependent on government. Best of all, you don't have to mail away for it, and you don't have to trust someone else's vault. You can hold it in your hand. You can take it home with you. You can start owning gold today for as little as $40, depending on up-to-the-minute market prices. Visit Accurate Precious Metals today in Salem, 1855 Hawthorne Avenue Northeast, or visit their website, AccuratePMR.com. If you have questions about how Accurate Precious Metals Refineries can help you, call them at 503-400-5608.
Welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where we discuss the biblical roots of our people and our faith. Link to Accurate Precious Metals Refineries, our morning show sponsor at HebrewNationOnline.com. Lines are open, so call 503-967-3001 if you would like to join in the conversation. You can also chat with us online in the morning show chat room at HebrewNation.net.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Hebrew Nation Morning Show with Teresa Casolino and me, Kimberly Rogers. And our special guest is from Aqaba, Jordan this morning. His name is Larry. And I tried to get Pam to come on as well. She was interviewed in that interview in the first half hour. But she said, oh, I think Larry can handle it. So, but anyway, so I want to say good morning to you, Larry.
Good morning.
I tell you what, I had such a good time, in Jordan, and Larry and Pam were my hosts, and their hospitality is every bit as good as the Arab hospitality, I could tell you.
Wow. Yeah, she's done nothing but talk about what a wonderful time she had while she was there with y'all and wanting to go live there, but being forbidden to by her daughter-in-law.
Well, Larry, you were there when I was interviewing Harb, and of course you were there when I was interviewing the other members of the community. And so why don't you tell us why the Ephraimite community there now thinks it's time for people in the United States to know that they exist?
Well, I think that when we come to that understanding, obviously it's not just a doctrinal thing. It's a personal revelation of answering a call within yourself that when you feel moved and motivated by the Spirit to yearn to come back, and that place answered answered to us. I don't think it's not selectively the only place where people return, but for us, as we heard that answering that call within ourselves, that's where the Spirit led us.
Well, it's interesting that in Daniel chapter 11 verse 41, when it's talking about the Antichrist in our day, it's talking about the Antichrist. It says there that he, the Antichrist, shall also enter into the glorious land, and many countries will be overthrown, but these will escape out of his hand: Edom, Moab, and the chief of the children of Ammon. Now, Ammon is Jordan's capital right now, and the chief of the children of Ammon, the chief there today is King Abdullah II. And so Edom and Moab and Ammon are part of southern Jordan, are they not?
Western Jordan, right, which includes Southern Jordan, but typically Western Jordan, right.
And so one of the things that happened to me, I got all excited about this when I realized it. One of the things that happened to me when you and I and Pam were talking, I was standing in your dining room, and we were talking about the Hashemites. And I've used that term Hashemite since for decades. We all know about the Hashemite family. If you follow Jordan at all, you know that they call themselves Hashemites. Is that right, Larry?
Correct. Right.
Okay.
The Hashemites were the ruling entity in the kingdom of Hejaz to the south for millennia, and were introduced into Jordan under the British mandate.
Okay. But while I was talking with you and Pam, all of a sudden I understood something. Hashemite is spelled H-A-S-H-E-M, Hashemites.
Right.
Hashemites, Teresa.
Yes.
Yeah, that was stunned.
Yeah, you blew me away when I was like, oh, Hashemites, Hashem. Okay, I get it now.
Now, yeah. How this is relevant to the interview that I played with Harb is because we need to understand in the Hebrew Roots community something a little more subtle than every Muslim is an Edomite. You know, rather we need to understand that Christians and Jews have gotten mixed in with the Edomites there. You know, I teach and we talk about in the Hebrew Roots community that Ephraimites are mixed into the Edomite Catholic Church, right? I mean, the Catholic Church was formed by Edomites, and I've said this in my teachings. Other teachers teach this, that it was descendants of Esau that created the Catholic Church, and out of that church comes the protesting Catholics. We call them Protestants today. But there were other Edomites, who started Islam. And some would argue even that the Catholic Edomite Church started Islam. But the point that I'm making is that Christians and Jews got absorbed into Islam.
Yeah.
And so we can't go around now lumping everybody who is a Muslim with the Edomites. But in fact, maybe they are. Maybe they're not Jacobites, okay? Maybe some of those people who are from Islam, they're Muslims, are actually let's say 100% of them are Edomites. They're not, but let's just say that. Deuteronomy 23:7 says, "You shall not hate an Edomite, for he is your brother."
Yeah.
"And you shall not hate an Egyptian, because you were a stranger in his land." And so, even if they're all Edomites, we're not allowed to treat them badly. But Harb is such a nice man. And I have to tell you, I didn't feel any threat or any deceitfulness from Harb when I was talking with him. That's why I wanted to interview him.
Yeah, and I remember you saying that you kept on looking at him and trying to see, you know, a spirit of deceit. You were trying to find out if he was being insincere, if you could find any threat in him, and you said nothing. I mean, the man was actually, I started crying when the interview started with what he was saying, because this is the first time I've heard it.
Right.
And he brought tears to my eyes just because of how much of his heart he was putting out in front. I have to say, I didn't think he was lying either.
So, you know, here's the reason why this is important for us now. Because if America is the end time Babylon, there are places of safety that are not in the United States. In fact, there are no places mentioned in Scripture that are any place in the U.S. One of the things that I've heard for many years is, where are the safe places in the United States? There are none. they're all in the Middle East, and most of them are in western or southern Jordan, and so there's even one in Lebanon that the Bible talks about. So this is important for us to know about Muslims in Aqaba and in that area, because if we're going to go there, we're going to have to know that we'll be safe there. Is that right, Larry?
Yes. The Arabs that we're familiar with, that we have been living with since we moved there in 2005, more self-identify with Ishmael. And, you know, Ishmael has a great covenant promise, you know, towards them by the Lord, that, you know, in Isaiah 60, that they will bring an offering acceptable to the Lord at the end of days. And but on more to your point about the identity, this is something that you won't hear on the mainstream news, but my Arab neighbor across the street, you know, told me about that. After the immolation of Moath Kasasbi, that was the Jordanian pilot that was burned, his brother was on Jordanian radio and said that if this is Islam, I'm not a Muslim. And
I did not hear that. Right.
Yeah.
Well,
you won't hear it. You won't hear it on public radio. You'll hear it, but you would hear it if you were spoke Arabic and you were living in Jordan.
Right. Okay. Well, the king of Jordan said the same thing this morning. I have the headline in Beast Watch News. But here's something that people need to know about Ishmael. In my teachings, I always separate Ishmael from Esau. In the beginning of the wars, it says that Ishmael is in the tents of Edom, but Ishmael in the wilderness never gave any of the children of Israel a problem. The problems came from Edom and from the Amalekites. Amalekites are grandchildren of Esau. So since these people identify with Ishmael, and this area is very close to where Ishmael settled, which would be, you know, is actually their territory is in Israel, but we're not that far away from where Ishmael actually settled in the beginning. Go ahead, Larry, and continue making your point.
Well, that the area where the pilot was from is the area called Kerik, and the name Kasasbi, and I'm going to give you a little background that you probably won't get otherwise, but Kasasbi was not an Arabic name. It was a lay function within the early Christian community there. And so as you mentioned earlier, that there are Christians and Jews amongst them. Well, that tribe is a great tribe there in that area, and that this is one name amongst the tribe.
Uh-huh.
But in the past, historically, they had a Christian identity, and because of the jizya or the gold tax, they converted. They stayed with the land, and this is common, as is known to be common amongst the Bedouins around Jerusalem that converted rather than leave the land. Mm-hmm. And then in another part of Western Jordan, the descendants of that place, of that Western Jordan up in the north and south of the Gilad, they identified back to the first believers that fled Jerusalem, that believed the words of the prophet. They fled there, and their descendants are alive today because they believe the prophetic word. And amongst those in those communities, they have been Christian for 2,000 years. And you can find headstones that go back that have the menorah and other
wow.
Christian symbols. So that is a place that has been historically. Believers have lived there, and will again, as Kimberly pointed out.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So, the tax is it pretty heavy?
Do you have to pay?
Well, no. The latest Christians that were released by Daesh, they had to pay the jizya, and the jizya is a tax that Muslims impose upon unbelievers, and it has to be paid in gold. And so no, we don't pay that. You know, I'm a resident there, but no, they don't enforce that. Jordan has a clearly pluralistic statement for other religions there. So no, that doesn't happen there. But in the past, historically, that had happened. And it's called the jizya, and it's still enforced in some areas, and especially under this radicalized Islam.
And it has to be paid in gold.
The jizya has to be paid in gold. That's one of the stipulations.
Yeah, it's not a Muslims don't accept fiat currency.
Right.
so they're not going to take it out of my paycheck.
No.
Okay. Well, one of the things that really hit home with me was because I kept hearing over and over when I was there that from different members of the community that you believe that it is time for people at large, you know, to know that you guys are there. And one of the reasons is because, as I said before, if America is Babylon, then we need to come out of Babylon, right? The call is to come out of her so that you don't partake in her destruction. Now, Eddie Chumney was there last summer, I believe, and then I came in January, and your community said that they saw that as prophetic, and they took it as a sign that now is the time for people to start praying to the Father about whether or not they should be leaving America, Babylon, and possibly moving to Jordan. Can you speak to that, Larry?
I can. In a manner. Eddie is probably with one of the only Hebraic Roots Bible study teachers that actually articulates the restoration of the House of Israel, including, you know, that means to leave Babylon, return to the land, and he has identified it in several of his teachings about the specific areas of return. And as you know, when I got a call from you that Eddie recommended that you come to see us, and we did receive that as a word that it was time, you know, that the brethren began to wake up to the possibilities. I mean, we hear stories about people going to Costa Rica and Bolivia and things like that, and there's no place in the word that about going to those places. But one of the things that people have to answer the word of the Lord, but not based on fear of the Lord, but not fear of the things that are coming specifically, because when people have come to Jordan, you know, that there are teachers that have shared the understanding of Jordan at different times, different places, and people came out of a spirit of fear, and by and large they come for a while, they don't assimilate into the either into the community or into the broader work of the Lord there, and so with people, you know, are coming there. When we came to be a part of a work that had been going on many years prior to us coming there, and what we found was the Lord put us in the hearts of the people and put them in our hearts, and so, you know, for those who come there, we want to see the salvation of those people, and if you don't have that as part of your understanding, then it's not going to work out well for you. If you're just going to Jordan, just to get out of Dodge, then
right.
you're not really going to be out of Dodge because you're carrying the same mentality with you.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, you know, but if you do come, I mean, it is a, you know, it's an awesome place to live. Your testimony is that. I mean, Eddie shared the same thing, and we believe that people are going to be leaving and coming in, and you know, it's the last place that the children of Israel were before they made the trip north into the Promised Land, and we believe it's a gateway place people will be able to come to. In fact, the city of Aqaba, the man that owns my building, he said in ancient times it was known as Ya'akuba, the city of Jacob. And so, you know, it is the easiest place to live. I mean, Kimberly's been there. I mean, she's been back and forth between Israel and Jordan. And there is it's easy to be there because the Lord has worked on the hearts and minds of the people there that they want you. They want to be there. And I'll tell you who they really like. The women love what we call the American women or the Christian women that come. They just want to spend time with you. And
how about that?
And it's not because they're oppressed in the same way that. Oftentimes it's presented. You'll see men and women walking hand in hand down the street, and if you get to know, I mean, she's been in the houses of some of our Muslim friends, and I'm sure she didn't detect any kind of abuse towards their wives or anything like that. It's a very
respectful,
it's a very wholesome place. It's a very respectful place.
Right. You know, I want to tell this funny story about going between Jordan and Israel. When I went to Jordan from Israel, Jordan just wanted to know what I was going to do there. I said I was going to go look at Petra and Wadi Rum, and they let me through. When I was coming back to Israel, they have stricter standards for letting you in, and they looked through my bags, and I had to unpack things, and they had to look, and they asked me the same question 5 different ways, and wanted to know where I had been, and I said I was visiting friends, and they wanted to know why my friends live in Jordan, and I said, because you won't let them in. and so they laughed. They kind of chuckled. And then they asked me that question. So they're living in Israel, huh? Or in Jordan, huh? So why do they live there? And they asked me again. And I said, because you won't let them live in Israel. And one of them finally spoke up and said, it's our government. And I said, yes, I know. Your government won't let these people live in Israel, but you know, your people want to, the Ephraimites in Jordan want to go, do the feasts, you know, and it's really close to Jerusalem. It's probprobably what, about a 3.5 or 4 hour drive. I mean, you know, we do that here in the United States just to go to, you know, Six Flags or something, right?
Right.
So you can go to the feasts very easily. It's not expensive to live in Aqaba. And like you said, you know, it's been known as the city of Jacob. So I'm thinking this is probably a good place to go if the Lord calls you there. And I think that because the Lord has called you guys there, Larry, you and the other Ephraimites, that as we get closer to the start of the Great Tribulation, the Lord is going to call more people. Because eventually, those who do survive what's coming on spiritual Babylon here in America, they're going to be going somewhere in the Middle East as refugees. That's my personal opinion.
Oh, I want to share something. Now, you drove around with us and you saw that one of the things that is happening, they are building homes and dwelling places there on an exponential rate. I mean, there's just nothing accounting for it. The, you know, right up, you know, from the sea to the mountain, to the sides of the mountains, and as, and up out of the, into the desert, they're building homes as fast as they can. And we believe, of course, I mean, from our perspective, that we believe that they're building it for those that will come.
Right. Yeah, because that's part of the prophecy, that you'll live in homes that are, you did not build. And, you know, Jordan is part of the Lord's territory. Hey, everybody, stay tuned. We're going to have more with Larry Ferguson on the other side.
Yeah.
Behind the Red Lion on Hawthorne Avenue in Salem, 503-400-5608.
KPJC Salem.
Welcome back to the third. Oh, I'm sorry. No, this is the fourth. It's going too fast.
This is it. This is it.
we're running up against the wall, folks, here. You know, what happens when I hear that song is I get dancing in my seat and I forget what I'm doing.
Did you hear that, Don Wyan? It's lowering production.
Yes. Well, you know, we were talking during the break, and I, this is a very good point, Teresa, that you were making about assimilating into another culture. One of the things that was brought up in the interview by Pam was about, you know, when you go to, Aqaba, that you need to assimilate into their culture. And, so that does not mean converting to Islam. It does not mean becoming, you know, something other than what we are. But you made a good point about that. And I want you and Larry to talk about that for a minute.
Yeah. I had mentioned to Larry that having traveled and lived in Mexico and been to Europe, and it's very important to arrive with an idea of what to expect from the local culture, because you can make a faux pas that will make it very difficult for you to regain a confidence, or for you to get off on a good start without having to work really hard to regain the people's trust or even their friendship, because you may have caused them shame, you may have caused them an insult. And it might have been completely unintended, but that is the case. And I'm just going to relate a small story here. When we went to Mexico one time, and I should have kind of knew better, but wasn't thinking. And we had visited my aunt's house, and I remarked at how I really thought she had a beautiful fruit bowl set up, and it was made out of clay. And my mom gave me the look, and I was like, what did I do? And my aunt goes, you like it? And I said, I think it's gorgeous. And she went and started wrapping it up for me. And I was like, no, aunt, I can't take it with me. And I'm thinking, how am I going to get this glass back to the States? And besides, I didn't say it for that reason, but I made a gesture and she responded appropriately. It was my fault. Yeah. I mean, I still have it to this day, but I was embarrassed, and I could have just said, I'm not taking that, but that would have even been more injurious to what was happening there.
Right. Well, and you know what, Larry, you said something earlier about, you know, don't come over here just trying to escape the United States. You also have to leave, you know, mental and spiritual Babylon behind. And to me, part of that is to learn how to be in the Hebrew culture. Those people live closer to what the ancient Hebrew culture was than we do here, don't you think?
Oh, certainly, certainly. Yeah. Everything, and as Teresa was saying, you have the same phenomena there. If you go into somebody's house and you make a comment about something, they're as likely to give you that thing that you admired as what happened to her. But I got my train of thought here. But it's the same kind of thing. You have the same kind of phenomena there. But everything's built on relationship. Everything that when you go there, you don't just rush into a store typically, unless it's the grocery store. If you go in to buy something and you begin to try and negotiate the best price, that's offensive because, you know, they look for a relationship. And so I made the mistake of taking people, you know, I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed. I have a relationship with some people that, you know, that sell appliances and things. And so I took somebody down, a new arrival to the community, and I took them into the place to meet the owner of the place. What do they want to do? They want to sit down. They want to have tea. They want to have coffee. They want to visit. They want to get to know you. And the individual was just, I mean, he was on a time schedule. His agenda was, I've got to get this done. I've got to get this. And that's an embarrassment. That's a shame that you can submit to somebody. So one of the things that I learned in being there was, it tracks back to this thing of the mindset, an Eastern mindset. The uncle of Harb, I was out visiting with him one day, and he said to me, "This is how I know that you love me. You spend time with me." You know, and there's no substitute for spending time. And when Eddie Chumney interviewed Rabbi Loriel, he said, actually it was repeating a comment that he had had with Hanak Young, and he said, we have to spend time together. And there's no substitute for, in a relationship, for spending time, whether it's with the Lord or with brethren, or with
That's
the
so
people
true.
Of the culture that you're going to meet. You don't rush in and try and live the same life that you lived where you were. You go in and you spend time and you get to know them. And that's a very Eastern mindset.
Yes.
It's like when Abraham greeted the three messengers, you know, you have a meal, you spend time before you ever get down to business.
Right. You know, that's part of the American Babylonian mentality, is being in this rat race, and we need to just get things done right now. And I don't need to have a relationship with you. In fact, that's normal in our culture. We don't have relationships with our bankers anymore. We don't have relationships with our local grocers anymore. We don't practically know anyone except maybe our immediate family and maybe some people in our congregations. So we're not even willing to go outside of our basic families and Hebrew communities anymore in America to try to form relationships. Well, that is something that you have to do. I noticed this even in Israel. The you know, on Shabbat, when I was in Jerusalem on Shabbat, those people want to sit. I would go down into the lobby of the hotel, and I would be sitting there and would, you know, strike up a conversation and would think that it was going to be just, you know, hi, hello, I'm being nice to you, right?
Yeah.
No. Then here they come, and they're at the table, and they're asking questions, and then, you know, I'm asking them questions. And even on the airplane, Larry, I mean, the Jews wanted to know who I was, where I came from, what I was going to do. I mean, they want to form relationships. We in America, in Mystery Babylon, have forgotten this aspect, and it's very important when we want to go to those places of safety.
Yes. Yes, it is. A virtual relationship is not a real relationship. It's not. You can't get to know people without spending time with them in face to face. In fact,
this is true.
The whole face to face, I mean, that concept is endemic to our relationship with the Lord. If we're not face to face, if he's not face to face with us, then we don't really know him.
Well, I totally agree with that. In fact, Mark and Joanne Ostrowski were here on the show a couple of weeks ago, and they were giving their interview with Hands to the Land. And he brought up the same point you did with respect to relationship, whereas he felt when he was assigned to paint on the premises at the kibbutz, he was driven. He was like, got to get this painted. And they have senior citizens that are live there. And some of the employees would stop to talk, and Mark felt compelled to get the job done until finally one of the natives came over and said, it's more important for us to maintain and keep and make relationships than in getting the painting done. The painting will get done. And it's, Mark said that was revelatory for him, for both of them. And it made the stay so much more pleasant. And it's a mindset, like you were saying, Kimberly, we've got this Babylonian mindset. It's a mindset where we just want to get what we want and leave. We're busy. We're
right.
Very busy people.
Yeah. Right.
And that comes off as arrogance. Whereas we're accustomed to it. All I want to do is get in line at Walmart, pay for my stuff, and leave. Okay? But that's not the way it works there.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you what the Muslims that I met, and even the Israelis that I met, are really good at. They are good at the Dale Carnegie How to Win Friends and Influence People thing. because his number one rule is you have to make the other person feel like they're really important.
Yeah.
And that's what they do. Like I said in the interview, we went to Petra. Larry and another gal and I went to Petra, and we stopped at this little place before we got to Petra, a little tourist place. When we walked in, there were three Muslims in there, and every one of them was serving somebody, and they were bringing tea, and they were talking, and they were coming over and saying, you know, if you like that, I'll give it to you for this amount, which was always a lot less than what's on the tag, you know. And they were just so, I couldn't believe it. I mean, in America, you stop at a tourist area, they don't, you know, hardly talk to you when you give them your money. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
Go ahead, Larry.
That is part of it. And it can be a little off-putting if you're not used to it. And and it takes a while to understand. I mean, I've literally had, when I've been driving around, I've been, when I went to Amman and asked a local, you know, where a place was, and he could tell I was having a difficulty. And he says, and after a couple of minutes, he said, just follow me. And he led me, you know, miles at the drop of a hat. And this happens all the time. I mean, it's not, it happens in Aqaba. You'll stop at the light. We never stop at stop signs, but we do stop at lights. And they'll look over at you and say, where are you from? And they'll say, Texas. And they'll say, welcome, you're welcome. You know, and it's, everybody can at least say that. And they're very gracious. They want to help. And it's a genuine thing. It's not, because we have a utilitarian attitude towards each other. We expect that from other people, and it's not always that way.
Right. One of the other things that I want to let people know about there is how beautiful the homes are. Oh my goodness. Marble floors or tile floors and granite countertops. That's kind of like standard construction there. And I just was amazed at, you know, now I guess, of course, the one apartment that I looked at that is rentable was going to be like $350 US, and it was a two bedroom, and it had a courtyard outside that was tiled with little areas left open for you to grow things, and I was stunned.
I just heard ears go up. How much a month?
Yeah. Well, rents are going up there, so you know a two-bedroom apartment might be between $400 and $500 now. I think is what you said, Larry. But we have another caller. I have to go to that. What is your name, caller?
Well, good morning, sister. This is Claire. Shalom, everyone. Welcome
Thanks,
back,
Claire.
Kimberly.
Thank you. Do you have a question for Larry?
Not really. This is a very reasonable rant. I really wanted to sort of change the subject for a moment and remind everyone that today is Purim. And I encourage everyone to listen to Netanyahu's speech on YouTube that he gave to Congress yesterday because he, like Esther, came before the king, so to speak, beseeching on behalf of Israel. You know, before the plan for the annihilation of the state.
That's right. And thank you very much, Claire. We do have to get back to the interview. And if you want to listen to Netanyahu's speech, it is on yesterday's Beast Watch News, the full thing. Thank you for calling, Claire.
Yes, and welcome back, Kimberly.
Right,
and shalom to you and all your friends in Israel. I look forward to visiting Jordan myself.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Shalom.
Right. Shalom. Okay, can you hear me now? I guess what I did was I cut us off.
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, let me call Teresa. I hit a wrong button when I was letting Claire go. Are you there, Teresa?
Yeah.
Okay, I got to add Teresa to the group call. Oh, that's too bad. Well, those things happen. This is live radio after all. We're back. Anyway, yes. One of the things that I wanted to talk about also with you, Larry, that you did was one night you opened up a map of the Dead Sea. And I got my prophetic eyes opened by a big shot. I mean, a big, big way. Because the book of Revelation talks about when the woman escapes, it's talking about there the woman escaping from Judea, like Yeshua said, you know, when the altar gets desolated, that let those in Judea flee. And before I tell you what Larry showed me, when I was in Israel, even before I went to Jordan, I was on Mount of Olives looking across to Temple Mount, and I realized at that moment that it was the Kidron Valley that children of Israel who are in Judea, they will flee down that mountain. Why would they flee, that valley? Why would they flee down the Kidron Valley? Well, because those who are interested in the altar and what's happening there will be probably there in Jerusalem. And they'll be either standing around Temple Mount, they'll be on one side of the Kidron Valley, or they'll be congregated on the Mount of Olives trying to see what's going on with the altar over, you know, across the Kidron Valley, because you can see it pretty well. And I realized the minute that they see that altar go down, they are going to just go right down that Kidron Valley, make that 20-mile trek out to the Dead Sea Road. And then when I got to Jordan, Larry opened up this National Geographic map photo of the Dead Sea, and there he showed me the eagle with two wings.
Oh, that was so cool.
And I'm telling you, you can Google this, this eagle with two wings. But here is the part that I think would be missed by, you know, some people. This eagle that you can see now in the Dead Sea, which would be a way for the children of Israel, those who flee Judea, to cross into Jordan.
Oh, yeah, I think I know where you're going with this.
On the two wings of the eagle, those two wings go into Jordan.
Yeah.
And the reason that that's prophetic is because that image has only been able to be seen in just the last decade, maybe, because of the lowering of the Dead Sea,
water.
Water, yes.
That's amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this is not a thing that nobody could have ever foretold this. They would never have been able to see this in any generation prior to this one.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
So the daughters of Moab will receive the outcast of his people. And so in order to, as she said, the eagle's head looks north and the wings are spread out and the talons are the wadis that go up into the mountains there. And so they will, if that is at least one understanding that that we share over there, that as they flee into those in the fords of Arnon, that takes you up into the Petra area, and also there'll be a Basra up into Basra and Tefillah, these ancient cities that are there that will receive the outcast.
Yeah, so we, Teresa, will you, I've got that link to that that photo of the eagle. We'll put that in our synopsis so that everybody can go and take a look at that. And you will see the prophetic value. I mean, I'm just giddy. the minute he showed me that, so much happened in Jordan that, shows me about the fulfillment of the prophecies, of the safe places, of the two wings of an eagle, of how, the Lord's people are among the Muslims, and here we have some Ephraimites that are already there, and they're waiting now.
70 of them,
suffering.
By chance.
We're suffering. We're suffering over there.
I know. At dinner one night, you know, Valerie had cooked this banquet dinner. We were sitting there, and we're all very quiet, and all of a sudden he goes, "Ooh, we suffering. Here we are eating in this gorgeous home, in this huge table that they have with all these great people around, you know, wonderful, kind, loving Ephraimite people, and this great food. Yeah, we was suffering.
You was suffering, eh? Too funny.
One of the things that I kept hearing from them is that they believe people will come in three waves. The first wave will be those who the Lord calls, and they will come with all of their stuff. Then the second wave will be those who see the danger coming in the country where they live, and they will get their backpacks and they'll get out just before the destruction happens. And then the third wave will be those refugees who leave their country with nothing. So wherever you are on the planet Earth, just know that the Lord has appointed several places of safety. And next week, we're going to be talking with a gal whose name is Joni. She was one of the first ones to go to Aqaba about 20 years ago. And she is going to be talking with us next week in the first hour. You're going to want to hear this because she's going to tell us about these places of safety. And she gave me a sheet of paper with so many scriptures on it. She's been studying this for 20 years.
Wow.
Larry, it has been a pleasure to have you on.
Yes, it really has. Thank you.
It was nice to meet you, Teresa. And one thing I have to say that we well, one of the things that we have to learn is to receive one another based on the relationships we have with people. When Kimberly came, she came recommended by Eddie, and because we have a relationship with Eddie, we received Kimberly. And we have to begin to practice that. You don't just do that overnight. You have to learn to have that confidence that in the people that send people, or else we won't be prepared for the number of people that are going to come. And I think it's important that we begin to practice this in our Hebraic roots. When people show up, you know, it's always easy to welcome the quote, the great ones, but just regular people showing up, we need to have the same graciousness and hospitality for them as we would anybody. People used to come all the time to Jordan to make the visa runs, and many were surprised at what they found there. And I hope that those that come will continue to experience things like Kimberly did when she came.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's us having to focus on the relationship so that we can pass each other along, like you said, in trust and in testimony. Excellent. Witnesses.
Everything is about relationship in the now I see it like, you know, as the kingdom, but there everything is about relationship. And you know, this is just the three of us talking. I was a little bit not nervous, but dubious. Here Kimberly's coming. She has, and I shared this with her. And then, and you can have preconceived notions about people, but if you don't spend enough time with them to get to know them, then that's all you're left with. And it takes time for people. And before we had a relationship with Eddie's friend, Kimberly, now we have a relationship, Kimberly, our friend, you know, our dear sister, and we have to do that. Okay.
We'll hear what you have to say after the show, but you guys, we'll talk to you later.
Okay.
His light now shines, the darkness must flee. The darkness must flee from the living word. His light now shines, the darkness must flee. Yeshua is the light of the world.